TV party tonight!
What?
TV party tonight!
Oh!
We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated, yes.
To our favorite shows!
Oh, my circuit!
Everybody watch Hippotoes!
Scary Dog!
Pearson at Blurnsville!
Futurama!
Good evening. You are listening to a Radligion Broadcasting premiere podcast TV party tonight. I'm your host, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Radligion. And tonight, our favorite show, and probably only us because I don't think anyone else watches this, is Pennyworth Season 2, brought to you by the good people at Primrose Hill Productions, DC Entertainment, and Warner Horizon Television. Pennyworth is an American crime drama television series based on the characters published by DC Comics and created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger that premiered on July 20th, 2019 on Epix. The series is executive produced by Bruno Heller and Danny Cannon and stars Jack Bannon as the titular Alfred Pennyworth alongside Ben Aldridge, Emma Pites, Ryan Fletcher, Hainsley Lloyd Bennett, Paloma Faith, Polly Walker, and Jason Fleming. This second season was confirmed for October 27, 2019, to begin filming in January 2020. However, filming paused in 2020 due to COVID-19. The second season premiered on December 13th. In May, it was reported the series was looking to move towards HBO Max. Pennyworth explores the early life of the titular Wayne family butler, Alfred Pennyworth, a former British SAS soldier who is forming his own security company in an alternate universe, London, which combines aspects of the 1950s and 60s, which invents and practices such as modern civil war and televised public executions. Mm-hmm. Alfred becomes a target of the Raven Society, a group conspiring to take over the British government, and begins working against them alongside American agents of the No Name League, Thomas Wayne and Martha Kane, the future parents of Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Joining me to talk about this, as he did in the first season, is my good buddy, Mr. Essential, Jesse Starcher. How do you do, sir?
I said, Alfie, are you okay? Are you okay, Alfie? So I was listening to a video right before we started this podcast on rock and metal songs that are turning 20 this year. And yes, Annie, Are You Okay? By Alien Ant Farm is turning 20 this year, Mark. Man, wow. There was a lot of great songs that came out in 2001. Drowning Pool, Bodies, System of a Down's, that iconic song that they have. But we're not here to talk about music, Mark.
No, we did that already this week, several times, as a matter of fact.
But can you answer me the question? Is Alfie okay?
He's better this season than he was last season.
Okay, all right. I mean, are you talking about, like, health-wise, or are you just talking about you enjoyed it, you thought it was better this year?
I felt like the first season, I have to go back and listen to our podcast, and you really should, it's in the archives. We talked about the first season in 2019 at the end of it, and I think I said at the time that it moved kind of slow.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little hard to follow, and because this is alternate universe London, where fascists are trying to take over London, and, you know, the Americans are sort of operating under the cover of night, but not really out in the open. Between the accents and sort of the hard-to-follow plot, I just thought the whole thing was kind of a little difficult to follow. And I stuck with it so that we could talk about it, but I don't know if I would have stayed with it otherwise. The second season, it's still not my favorite show, despite the opening. it's one of those where we committed to talking about it, so I do, and it's not entertaining. It's very pulpy. You know what I mean?
Yes. Oh yeah.
You know, it's one of those where if you're into sex and violence and Cockney accents, it's a fun show to watch. And this season, they amped up the sex and the cursing and the Cockney accents a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they amped up the fun, but it's still kind of a stupid, silly show.
Yeah, I remember watching the first season, and before going into it, I was just like, man, I have no hopes for this show. I didn't have. I knew what I was getting into, thinking that it wasn't going to impress me. But I ended up being, if I remember correctly, I ended up being somewhat pleased with at least what was presented when I sat down and watched it. It wasn't anything that blew my socks off. It wasn't some of the better DC shows that we've reviewed on here. But this, I remember season one sticking with me. And season two, as we get into it, man, does it have, it stays on course for a little bit. And then when we reach like the last episode, the last two episodes, holy crap, I didn't know what was going on. So we'll talk about that as we go through it. But yeah, there was a good bit of excitement. And
if I told you offline in our private chat that it kind of follows the same trajectory as Gotham.
Yeah.
Where it was like, hey, let's do a gritty Law and Order type cop drama about Jim Gordon's early years. Okay, well, after a season of that, no one wanted to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah. What if we brought in all the Batman villains now before there's a Batman and he's still a child?
Mm.
Okay, well, none of that makes any sense. Yeah, but people will watch that, and they did. And Gotham got really stupid really fast and remained stupid. Like, just when you thought Gotham couldn't get any dumber, they found a whole new level.
Oh, wow.
Like, by the time Gotham ended, I think everyone who watched that show was like, everybody in this show and the sets and everything just needs to be burned.
Well, and that's a show that I've never really tried to sit down and watch. You guys have talked about it on here, and my sister watches it, and I've seen, she enjoys what she's watched of it, but I still haven't got the patience to just jump in. I'm more of a Legends of Tomorrow guy. Mm-hmm. Because I'm going to be able to at least enjoy the fantastical with that. There's a lot more humor, I would assume, because Gotham seems more gritty and grimy.
Yeah, Gotham was very melodramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, Gotham was developed by the same guy that did this one, Bruno Heller. Bruno Heller is an English screenwriter, producer, and director. He's known for creating the HBO series Rome, which was super overdramatic, the CBS television series The Mentalist, and he produced the TV series Gotham, which, you know, I think that, like I said, the thing with Gotham was it had an interesting premise. It had, you know, a kind of like Gotham Central type premise, and then they abandoned it because people don't care about Jim Gordon. They care about Batman. They care about the Joker. They care about the Riddler. They care about Penguin. They care about Mr. Freeze. And so the show quickly becomes really stupid because, and we've talked about it on here in brief compared to other things, but we've never actually done a full review of Gotham. Nobody wants to.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
There were people noped out on that of the guys that we talked to. People noped out on that one pretty quickly. But I mean,
yeah.
I'm just as a point of comparison, and then we can get into talking about the episodes. Pennyworth kind of starts as the same thing. It's like, let's follow, you know, Alfred has this really violent past. You know, before he settles down and becomes the butler of the Wayne family, he was a soldier and he was a this and he was a that. So let's explore that. Here's the thing. Nobody gives a shit. And if they didn't have the association with Batman, you know, as loose as it is in this universe,
mm-hmm.
you could have easily changed everyone's name and this would be, you know, British crime drama.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I don't know if you'd even maintain the audience you have for this now, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's also not on, like the world's most famous network. It's on Epix.
No, you... I know there's rumors of moving it from Epix to HBO mm-hmm. Max. I think that's been tossed around here because I think, obviously, that's where a lot of the DC content's going to go. If there is a season three, which I don't know, have you seen anything about it actually being in stone that we're going to get a third season for this? Because
I saw the same thing that you did, that if they're going to get a third season, they're going to move it to HBO Max.
Okay. Well, regardless, yeah, Epix is not, I wouldn't even know where to go. I think that there is a way to access it through Amazon. And I've done that. Or I think I've seen it advertised while I was scrolling through, but again, I've I was able to at least watch it. Let's just say through a friend of mine.
I want to read this to you. I wonder if I read this to you the last time, but Pennyworth would almost be. This comes from Sam Barsanti of the AV Club. Pennyworth would almost be more entertaining if you changed some of the names and jettisoned the comic book connection entirely. Agree with that. At least then there'd be no distracting questions about why Thomas Wayne has a sister and why he's secretly working for the government instead of becoming a rich doctor back home. Mm-hmm. As it stands, though, the show is as entertaining as it is frustrating, feeling sort of like an adaptation of a comic based on Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is kind of like, if you're into, like, that Guy Ritchie, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, you know, the Boondock Saints kind of Cockney accent, violent, you know, British soccer hoodlums running around beating people up and shooting people, which is a genre people enjoy, and I'm not saying people shouldn't, then, you know, as silly as the show gets at times, then this is kind of the show for you. If you're like, we started watching it because we decided to kind of commit to as many of the comic book shows as we could, which quickly we got way out of hand, and I have to now cut back on that. but you know, that's what drew us to it. But I mean, there's, if you hit yourself in the head with a brick and you forget that Alfred Pennyworth, Thomas Wayne, and Martha Kane are part of the Batman universe in some ancillary way, then you would have no idea this was in any way adapted from any kind of comic book anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just a show. It's just a stupid show.
Yep.
So that's selling. That sell job. episode one. I'm gonna do three of these plot synopsis, and then we'll stop and we'll talk about it, and then we'll do it again, and then we'll talk about the last two.
Okay.
The last four. All right. So episode one, The Heavy Crown, and season one ended with. It turns out, Alfred's dad. Was a member of the Raven Society, and he tried to blow up something, and he in theory died. Alfred,
yeah, and this was in front of Alfie too. Alfred, yeah, had to shoot him, and of course he was able to escape, but his dad, I should say, Alfred was able to escape. His dad wasn't.
They had messed around with Alfred and Martha being a thing, but that never really pans out. And they had kind of hinted at Thomas and Martha possibly being a thing, but that definitely never pans out. So that's kind of where we are when this picks up. Several months have passed since the last season. Lord Harwood escaped, and his Raven Union has the British Army's backing, having taken over most of the UK. The Queen, Shag the Queen, and what remain of the League are besieged in London. Alfred runs a bar and does side jobs for both sides, being paid by Aziz, now a League Council member, to kidnap Salt, a supposedly minor Raven Union functionary. He is collecting money to leave the country for the USA. Meanwhile, Martha Kane has risen to lieutenant position in the League and meets with a returning Thomas Wayne, now named CIA section leader, who tells her that the U.S. will remain neutral in the conflict and that he is engaged to be married. Bette Sykes now works as a captain in the interrogation center of the Raven Union and, unhappy with her job, kills her superiors like you do and escapes escapes with an art student prisoner. Salt is sprung from Aziz's team by Gully, Alfred's old SAS captain, and is revealed to have been working with him. It is also shown that Salt is working on Project Stormcloud, a poison gas weapon, which will be one of the focal points of this whole season. Episode 2, The Burning Bridge. Is falling down, falling down. The CIA tasks Thomas Wayne to find dirt on Archbishop Potta, as he is an open opponent of nuclear warfare.
Oh, boy.
He meets with Aleister Crowley, who...
the religious... this poor religious figure
yeah.
meets up with a devil worshiper, and yes, folks, things aren't going to go so well for this guy.
He meets with Aleister Crowley. Dun, dun, dun,
who agrees, I'm singing it all the time in my head.
Who agrees to ruin the Archbishop's reputation for a kiss. Alfred and his friends get ready to leave the country with the money they accumulated. Alfie, feeling conflicted with leaving Sandra behind and getting into arguments with his mum, who wants to stay. Mrs. Gaunt learns about Stormcloud and seemingly talks Harwood out of using the poison gas. Amateur criminals kidnap Alfred's mother on the behest of a masked Mr. X in return for the money, but it is revealed it was Lieutenant Aziz who set up the whole thing and shows up as Alfred frees his mum. resulting in the kidnappers getting away with the money. Meanwhile, Bet and Katie stay in hiding as Bet realizes she cannot contact Lord Harwood. Episode 3. The Belt and the Welt. The Belt and Welt. After a strange dream involving his father, Alfred gets the idea that it was Captain Gully who stole their money. He gets his whereabouts from his wife and confronts him, but Gully swears on his honor it wasn't him and invites Alfred to do a robbery with his crew, which he denies. Meanwhile, Mr. Crowley seduces the Archbishop to the ways of the flesh and releases incriminating photos of him involved in an orgy, like you do, which causes Potter to resign and commit suicide. Martha, realizing from a comment by Alfred that it was Thomas who hired Crowley, confronts him, and in the first of many nags throughout this season, and is deeply disappointed. Bet and Katie take refuge at the home of the teacher of the latter, and Bet finally gets in contact with Lord Hardwood. Despite both Mrs. Gaunt and Salt trying to talk him out of saving her, Hardwood orders Salt to bring back Bet alive, but Salt's policemen open fire at the house. Dave Boy realizes he once drunkenly bragged to someone about the money, who prompts Alfred to notice a $500 ring, or 500-pound ring, on the finger of one of his waitresses, Sherry. She reveals it was given to her by Vic Dobson, a small-time crook. They track Vic to his home at the Carnival Caravan, and he and Alfred fight in the Hall of Mirrors, where Alfred mortally wounds him in self-defense. Sherry grabs the money and tries to escape in a car, but drives into a few barrels. This chick cannot drive
whatsoever. She hops in a car and proceeds to run into the only thing in the middle of the road.
Yeah, and she has an open field to drive, but manages to drive directly into the barrels, which, you know, immediately burst into flame.
Apparently are full of just it's gasoline. It's petrol, you know, and it immediately explodes.
With the explosion killing her and destroying the money, Bazza is mortally wounded by the explosion and makes Alfred and Dave Boy swear to not give up and make it to America as he dies. All right, so I've been talking for a while. I just read all three of those. What did you think of these first three episodes?
Okay, all right. So, yeah, I mean, look, we've got to get back with our characters here. We got to obviously catch up with Alfred. It's good to see Paloma Faith back as Bette and her crazy self. Just prone to fits of absolute violence if she feels necessary. And it's interesting to see her try to be in this structure that the Ravens, what is it called? I almost called it the Raven Society. That is not correct. is it the Raven Society? Oh, for Pete's sake. But anyway, she's obviously taking up this
role. It is,
role.
By the way.
Raven Society, okay. Well, for some reason, I was thinking Harry Potter there for a second. But anyway, you knew that that wasn't going to last. There's no way that she's going to be taking orders from somebody. And she ends up killing her superior officer and then escaping with the prisoner, which really, she is kind of on her own arc throughout this whole season. And then as we close in on the end, things start to kind of intermingle. But yeah, this kind of starts her arc. I thought it was funny that, you know, poor Alfred, all he wants to do is just go to the United States. Not only that, but he's got his friends that want to go with him. And it seems like at every turn, the money that he has gets stolen, or it gets taken away in some fashion, and his dreams of going to the Americas is gone. So, you know, we see that happen not only in these first three episodes, but it's going to happen again as we go through the next few episodes as well. Martha and Thomas, their relationship, it just seems to be complicated on top of complicated, and they don't make it any easier for themselves, especially in these first three episodes. Nice to see Aleister Crowley back. He was definitely a freaky character there at the beginning, in the first season. To see him come back and be a recurring character and as of some use for the CIA as well. It was interesting to watch that occur. I'm trying to think of what else really stood out. Well, I mean, we got our big, just like you said, the big thing that's going to be coming back throughout the rest of the season, and that's Project Stormcloud. I don't know if it gets revealed here at this point or not, but we understand that it's something that could really throw a wrench into the No Name League's fight.
It's a gas weapon, and the intention is they're going to use it to take control of the country by killing their own countrymen. So
yeah, and it's horrible.
Yeah,
it's horrible, and it's cool. It's good that Harwood, even though he doesn't seem to be extremely stable throughout this these first few episodes, it's good that he's decided that he's not going to use it. At least that's his plan, anyway. And what do you think of this character Salt, by the way?
I like the actor who plays him. I like his characterization. I like his affectations. He's, but I like it because I like kind of like a weirdly homosexual affectation on certain characters. So like when I watch The Gentlemen, you know, my favorite character in that movie is Hugh Grant.
Okay.
Who likes calling people like my love. So,
He's kind of soft. He's definitely soft-spoken.
Yeah, so weird, gay, soft, like foppish British affectations. I don't know why, but I think they're hilarious.
I mean, we meet this guy. The first time we meet this guy, he kills George Orwell in front of us by sticking I don't know what that – it looked like a file of some sort or a screwdriver into his ear and through his head.
So this guy, Colonel John Salt, is played by Edward Hogg. He's fantastic.
He
was in Harlots. Even better.
Okay. All right. Do you remember? No, you've talked about it. I've never seen it though. Do you remember his character in Harlots?
According to his wiki, he played Thomas Haxby. And yeah, fuck me if I remember who that was.
Okay. All right then. and then we have the arc.
Hey, he's also in The Irregulars. That's on right now.
Okay.
That's the Netflix show.
We have the long arc that's getting started here of Alfred and his former commanding officer, Gully, and that whole love triangle that happens between Alfred and Gully's wife. Oh my goodness, I had her name here. I think it was... started with Madeline. It's not Madeline. It starts with an M, I swear. Melanie. I didn't think it was going to last the whole season. And Gully's going to be around for a while, folks. Wait till we get to the end of this season. Because I wasn't expecting what was going to happen with Gully here. But yeah, this whole love triangle that starts where Gully's an abusive jerk. And he doesn't get along well with his wife sometimes.
So, hey, can I tell you who she was? Her real name is Jessica Elise DeGoy, and she's an Australian actress, and she was the Huntress in Arrow.
Okay. Okay, nice.
She's Mina Murray in the NBC TV series Dracula and Elizabeth Hawks in Underground.
Very nice.
Yes.
Well, other than that, I mean, we have some supporting roles here with Detective Aziz, Detective Inspector Aziz, who shows up, and I don't think he does a whole lot in these first three, other than did this say that he was responsible for setting up Alfred losing the money? I know that he shows up causing it to happen, but I didn't think he was behind it in any way. I think he just showed up at the wrong time while the bad guys who abducted Alfred's mom got away with the money.
I'll go back and reread it.
I can't remember. I mean, I don't think it matters really. Because Aziz always seems like he definitely feels like a good guy to me throughout this whole season. I don't want to sit there and think like he orchestrated this whole thing so that the bad guys would get away with his money. But it crossed my mind that Aziz didn't want Alfred to leave. A lot of people don't want Alfred to leave and go to the U.S., especially his mom.
Yeah, I mean, well, I just saw something else where it was a very similar thing, where it was like, you know, home is a wreck, and we need to go someplace else and start over, and the elderly person just being like, no, this is my home. This is where, this is everything I've ever known and loved, and I don't want to start over somewhere else.
Yeah.
So that's a very common thing, apparently, in a lot of the fiction, at least, that I've been dealing with lately. But the other side of that is, you know, I guess because of Alfred's prowess of fighting in the war, and what he, was known to be doing as a security person in the first season, he's gotten quite the reputation for a guy that can get some violent shit done.
Mm-hmm.
And London is in the middle of, like, a civil war.
Exactly. I was going to say the No Name League wants him to be there, if possible, on their side. And obviously, he's worked against the Raven Society before. Why wouldn't he want to stick around? And that is really a big part of this season, is Alfred's struggle of leaving his country in the midst of the chaos that's going on, and a lot of people wanting him to stay, a lot of people not wanting to leave with him.
Alfred is in conflict with himself in the sense of, like, he doesn't want to continue to be a violent guy. Like, if there's any connection at all to the Alfred that we know as the caretaker of Bruce Wayne, it's that at some point in his life, he wanted to give all this up and just be normal.
Mm-hmm.
And they really start to deal with that in season two. You know, his big quest to go to America is to get away from all of this and start over and just be a normal guy. And I think he even talks about, like, wanting to have, like, a normal life and leave all of this behind and everything. Which is why when he finally, after many, many tries of getting together the money and finally getting on Thomas Wayne's plane to go to America, he's like, I'm not going. I can't do this. And, of course, his mother's like, finally, and, like, fucks off, you know.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, my God, you've come to your senses. Hallelujah. But then, he tells Gully's wife, it doesn't matter. Anyone listening to this is, for the handful of people listening to this, it's not going to care that we're all over the place. But, and he tells Gully's wife at the end, he's like, I can't go. And she's like, why the fuck not? He's like, because I got to fight for my country. And,
yeah.
if your country isn't worth fighting for, what is? And she even tells him, she's like, well, that's dumb. But I get your point.
I think another driving factor for him to want to leave is obviously what happened at the end of season one, where it's nothing but bad memories.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he had a girlfriend or fiance, and she dies in the first season. And I think that kind of embittered him towards just being in London, the life in general, and just kind of wanting to get past all that. The problem is they don't really do anything. It's alluded to, but they don't do anything a lot with it. Like, he doesn't have any, like, flashbacks to it. He doesn't really talk about it. The first couple episodes, he's like, I got to get my money to go to America. And then it's like, I got to re-earn that money to go to America. And then at the end, it's like, I got to stop a bomb from going off.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of his whole thing. He has a brief respite where he's fucking around with Gully's wife. And even at that, it's a lot of, well, I'm here to put my dick in a vagina. I'm not really interested in you as a person.
Yeah.
And then he kind of has, like, a come to Jesus even about that, where he's like, maybe I like you for more, as more than just a vagina.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, like, the show follows a lot of the same stupid tropes as Gotham, to where people are falling in love way too easily with nothing else behind it. People are changing their mind because that's what the plot needs them to do. Like, it's an entertaining show if you don't think about it, but it is not well written.
Yeah. You know who I really, before we, we'll go on to the next few episodes here in a second, but the person I feel the most sympathy for in this whole season is Dave Boy.
Mm-hmm.
All Dave Boy wants to do is get to Hollywood so he can screw a movie star. And then every,
because you got
to
have goals.
At every turn, Alfred screws it up somehow, or somehow Alfred is involved in them not being able to make it over to the United States. And because he's such a good friend, because he's such a nice guy, and he's such a great soldier, and he respects Alfred so much. I don't think he likes him very well now, but he respects him so much. He's sticking around with him. But trust me, Dave Boy gripes throughout.
In any
whole
other
season.
TV show, there would have been a blow up between Dave Boy and Alfred, where he says, like, you're an agent of chaos in my life, and I can't stand it, and I'm going to America. Fuck you.
Yeah, and left, and left. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen, though. That nope. did not happen. He told him to fuck off a couple times, but that was about it.
I mean, it's a British show, so they all tell each other to fuck off.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's how they shake hands and leave.
At one point, I swear, he yells at Alfred. He goes, get to fuck. And the first thing I thought of was Berserker because of you.
Nice. Okay, so I'm actually going to change this up a little bit because they broke this season in two parts.
Okay.
So the first part was four episodes, and that ran from December 13th to December 27th. Then there was like a long break, and then the rest of it ran from March 7th, pretty straight until April 11th. So I'm just going to read the next two. So this is the kind of the mid-season finale is episode four, and then it picks up again with episode five. So here's what happens. The Hunted Fox. At Boz's funeral, Gully Troy shows up and Alfred agrees to do a robbery with him. Thomas visits Martha, asking for her help as his sister Patricia is in love with a seductive fashion designer who engages her at the party. Meanwhile, Ben Sykes and Katie smuggle themselves into London, and Bette's sister, who runs an S&M sex toy shop.
Peggy.
The Queen listens to the candidate's speech with Ripper proposing to free criminals and use them in their army, while Aziz tries to appeal to the democratic and moral values of people, and he gets elected as prime minister. Alfred and Troy successfully rob the Lord Mayor's coach, stealing the hidden gold he carries. This was fucking brutal, by the way. During the celebration, Alfred gets angry at seeing Troy abuse his wife, and they nearly come to blows. This is a great line, by the way. He's like, it happens in the club. He's like smacking around in the club. He's like, hey, you want to go home and beat your wife? That's fine, but don't do it here. And she's like, very noble, Alfred.
Yep.
And then agrees to do one last job with him. Alfred secretly kisses Mrs. Troy, though. Thomas and Martha work together as Martha proves to Patricia the fashion designer's infidelity by tying him up as he was trying to seduce her. While being naked like you do. And Patricia terminates the engagement. Thomas and Martha reconcile and have sex. Lord Harwood starts showing signs of mental imbalance, starting to consider using the poison gas, and is shown to be medicated by Salt. Subtly suggests to Mrs. Gaunt to reach out to Aziz and try to begin peace talks. The Raven leadership attends a demonstration of Stormcloud, shown how it is capable of quickly and efficiently killing prisoners. Unknowingly, they are being filmed by an undercover Lucius Fox. So we have Lucius Fox making his debut.
That's right.
So that is the kind of sort of mid-season finale. It picks up again a few months later, as far as the next episode being released. So this is episode 5, The Bleeding Heart, which debuted March 7th. Mrs. Gaunt meets with Prime Minister Aziz and warns him in vain to surrender or risk Stormcloud being deployed in London. Salt tells Lord Hardwood about Gaunt's secret meeting, who, no longer trusting her, has her imprisoned. Martha and Thomas deepen their relationship, with Thomas receiving a message from Lucius Fox asking to be extracted. Katie learns all the terrible things Bette has done, but still decides to stick by her and try to help her change. Alfred learns from Thomas that the tickets to America cost more than he assumed, making it necessary to work with Gully Troy again. They rob a fixed boxing match and make off with the winnings. However, due to the fighters getting into a squabble, I thought this was a wrestling match, by the way.
That was a wrestling match, yeah. It's funny because when that whole bit started, when they were talking about it, I thought it was a boxing match as well. Mm-hmm. But then when you get to the arena, it's like, oh, no, this is a wrestling match. And it's so funny because they do this whole like bit where they have to explain to Dave Boy that it's rigged, and he couldn't believe it because he's sitting there. He's like, "No, it's not rigged. They may bend it a little bit." They're like, "No, it's all rigged. It goes to a certain time."
Which in the 50s and 60s, it wasn't that well known. You know, the idea for wrestling being a work.
No, and the whole thing is that this operation, it hinges on the fact that it's going to go to this certain time. So they're absolutely certain, well, it's rigged, it's going to go to this certain time, and we'll be able to get out of there. But go ahead and continue.
Yeah, but then the wrestlers went into business for themselves.
And dude, you beat me to it, because I had that whole joke. I was like, holy shit, they went into business for themselves, and then next thing you know, everything's called off and everything ends 10 minutes early.
Which results in Banjo, one of Gully's men, killing several civilians in the chaos while being unmasked. Alfred's mother realizes where Alfred got the money from and expels him from her house. Alfred gives into the advances of Gully's wife, Melanie, and they have sex. Meanwhile, Gully takes Banjo to the woods and executes him. All right, so let's just talk about 4 and 5. I want to talk about Martha and Thomas. I kind of talked about this last season, because they spent a lot of time with Martha and Alfred, and Martha and Alfred had good chemistry together. I liked Martha and Thomas this season, though Martha got to be a little self-righteous and a bit of a nag. Like, you know, and it's so funny because I would have been content to just complain about it and be like, you know, they just made her kind of shrewish and I wish they hadn't. But they actually pay it off at the end. You know, like, after, you know, they have their ups and downs despite having sex and everything. And later on, you know, she's going to get pregnant with what you think is going to be Bruce Wayne, but it's not.
Whoa.
Yeah. Close alternate universe. And then there's, like, the whole bit where, like, Thomas does a thing, and she approves, and she's like, oh, he's like, oh, my God, I finally have your approval. Like,
yeah.
Thomas clearly has a lot of affection for her. And, you know, the thing of it is she has the hots for him, too, but she's, like, a lot of women characters where, yeah, penis is fine, but the mission is better. And that is so many women in women characters in fiction right now.
If Thomas would have, like, looked at the camera 5 times throughout this season and just went, women, I would have...
it would women not have can't, surprised me. Can't live with them, can't shoot them.
I feel you. I think what the writer... or director or whatever they're, I think what they're trying to get across here, she's a strong independent woman.
They don't need no man.
I get that. I understand that that is a motivation for this character, because she's a strong independent woman. But I mean, we don't have to be at odds with each other every 2 seconds. Their relationship, which, okay, some people may enjoy that friction between the two, and it's kind of cute to see them not get along, but to see them, like, at each other's throats, kicking each other. Well, poor Thomas. I don't know how many times he got kicked out and was so confused as to what he was trying to figure out. What did I say that made?
Oh my God! The best is when she tells him that she's pregnant, and he's like, "Okay, well then we have to go back to America." She's like, "No, but I'm a pregnant woman and I have to be in the battlefield because I'm a big, strong woman who don't need no man." And he's like, "You're pregnant, dummy."
Do you understand?
And then he's like, we should get married because it's the 50s and 60s and that's the right proper thing to do. And she's like, you know, like, oh, well, you can't tell me what to do.
Yeah, that ended that night. I was like, wow, well, way to go.
And so she storms off and Thomas is just like, I don't understand. You let me put my penis in you. Why? Why won't you let me marry you?
She
has such modern sensibilities, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, the relationship didn't... Clearly, this is the 60s, and, you know, a pregnant woman in the 60s, if we're going to... Even though she is a strong, independent woman, she's probably still at least somewhat concerned as to what society may think about what's going on. However, you know, Thomas was trying to bring that up, and she wouldn't have any of it. So I don't
know. Here's the thing. She has to have the baby because she has to give birth to Batman. But I feel like the way they're writing this character, more realistically, is she wouldn't have told Thomas and she would have gotten an abortion. Mm. She's like, I want to continue to be a secret agent and I don't have time for no babies. And so I'm going to go see a doctor.
I could very well be. Very well be. I mean... Thomas and Martha, it got a little grating sometimes, but
the actress who plays Martha, I like a lot. I think she's a very pretty gal. She has a lot of moxie, a lot of presence. One of my favorite characters in the show. I just wish they'd make her a little less, you know, a little less shrill.
I hear you. I hear you for sure. For sure.
Let's take a pause for the cause and let's pay some bills. So you didn't write any note. You didn't write any summaries, but you did write some notes. Did you use Grammarly to write your notes?
Every once in a while, Grammarly would pop up something that would tell me to edit this and or fix that. And sure enough, I listened to Grammarly. Tell us a little bit more.
Yes, sir. Grammarly's AI-powered products help people communicate more effectively. Grammarly helps you write mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly anywhere else you write on the web. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, and spelling mistakes, while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements. To download Grammarly today, go to getgrammarly.com/W2M Network. Again, that's getgrammarly.com/W2M Network to download Grammarly for free.
Yes, indeed. Dick. So tell me what you think about Lucius Fox and his appearance now. I mean, really, we don't get a whole lot in these two episodes, but did he defy what you were expecting, or is this kind of what you thought Lucius Fox would be in this setting?
Honestly, it was like, who are old people in Batman's life?
Let's make them young. Okay, yeah. And now what would they be doing if they were young?
Right. It's like they had to shoehorn that character in, because it's like, have you been watching those pitch meetings since Robert Winfrey put them in the chat?
No, I've wanted to, but I haven't had a chance now.
Okay, so there's always an exchange that happens where they'll reference a character from a previous thing, and the whole concept of pitch meeting is there's a screenwriter pitching to a studio executive, and it's played by the same guy. And so the studio executive part of his character will say, hey, that guy was in the movie. He was in the movie, sir. That's what I think of Lucius Fox in this show. Hey, he's a character from Batman's life. He is a character from Batman's life. Like, you as a viewer of this show are supposed to go, Lucius Fox.
Yes. Like, Easter egg. Oh, no, wait a second. He's a full-blown character. Yes.
Gotham was really bad at that.
I've heard there were some really, like, just foul ways that they screwed things up there.
Well, Gotham had a tendency to be like, let's take every character Batman's going to encounter from year one to The Dark Knight Returns and shove them into this world where they existed before Batman ever came to be. Like, not to harp on Gotham or anything, but if Gotham had actually played out on the show, in the comics, the way that it in the show, there would have been no Gotham for Batman to save.
Oh, wow.
Considering in, like, they did the No Man's Land arc in Gotham, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Yes, before Batman ever existed, they blew fucking Gotham up. Such a stupid show. Anyway, so that's kind of, you know, like, he's there. He serves a narrative purpose, but they shoehorned him in just so, you know, just so they say, look, it's Lucius Fox, you know him, he's from the show, he's from Batman.
Yes, indeed. Okay, all right. Well, I mean, if I'm looking at it, okay, this. Here he is. This is pretty much what I thought he would be doing. He'd be a scientist back in the day. Mm-hmm. I guess his placement in the story and making him an important part of it seemed okay. It's not like he was relatively like the star of the show, for sure. He was there and used to further the plot along.
I hope Joker's in the next season.
I hope they do not do that. But man, if
I hope Pennyworth just descends into all of Batman's rogues galleries the way Gotham did.
This last episode, this final episode, I don't know what the hell is going on. We can speculate when we get there. I was kind of going through some of my notes here, and this is where the plot, the manipulative plot of Salt kind of starts to take place, where mm-hmm. what's her name again, the Mrs.
Daunt.
Okay, so she is doing these peace talks, in quotes, that she was kind of put up to with Aziz, and then Salt goes behind her back and makes Harwood believe that she is secretly doing things that he doesn't he isn't aware of. So he's basically sowing seeds of mistrust in Harwood and also drugging him at the same time. He's the one responsible for giving him these medications that are slowly deteriorating his, I guess, handle on reality. I don't think that boils to a head in episode 5, but it's getting close. He's starting to kind of make his play at getting Harwood out of the way, which is interesting. And with Bette and Peg, I think Bette and Peg are kind of recouping at the S&M shop. And her friend, oh my goodness, what was her name again? I want to say Annie, but that's not it. That's probably not it. I have it here somewhere. But anyway, their arc is slowly moving forward, I guess you'd say, because I assume what Bette's trying to do, I know throughout up till episode 5, she's trying to get a hold of Harwood because they have had a past. They're friends.
Her name is Katie, by the way.
Katie, thank you. They're trying to get a hold of Harwood to, I guess, just connect, number one, and I think she wants to explain herself to Harwood as to why she killed her commanding officer. And then she starts to realize that Harwood's in a little bit of trouble. I don't think that happens yet, but we'll talk about that as it comes on to that. So that kind of, we're slowly getting to that. And I think that's all I have. I mean, we have Alfie's sleeping with Melanie at the end of episode 5. So Melanie Gully, his commanding officer's wife, is lying in bed with him. And do you think that's going to cause a problem? Yes, it does.
Yeah, buddy. All right. So we'll read the next two here, and then we'll close out with the last three.
Okay.
So episode 6 and 7, The Rose and Thorn. Alfred buys 3 tickets to America from the money gained in the robbery. He tells Sandra he is leaving and breaks up with her. Prime Minister Aziz and the Queen recruit him for one last job against his will.
One last job.
It's always one last job.
Jeez.
By blackmailing him with their knowledge that he had a fling with Melanie. Alfred, Dave Boy, and Martha spring Lucius Fox from the Raven Union, though it is a bloodshed. Alfred's mom reconciles with him and agrees to accompany him to America if he abstains from further violence. Lucius tells Thomas that Stormcloud is ready within a week and could kill everyone in London via fear-induced chemical attack.
Ugh.
But Thomas can do little but warn the CIA upper management. Martha is revealed to be pregnant with Thomas's child. Meanwhile, Aziz manipulates Ripper, who wants his position, and Aleister Crowley against each other, which ends with Ripper confronting Crowley to threaten him, but ends up drugged and institutionalized as he has terrifying hallucinations and cannot tell fantasy from reality. In the Raven Union, Salt manipulates an eager young lieutenant to speak up for Mrs. Gaunt, while also further drugging and manipulating Hardwood, who makes him a baronet and names him chief advisor. Under the influence of drugs, Lord Hardwood has a mental breakdown and beats the lieutenant to death and is locked up.
Yep.
Allowing Salt to take over. The Bloody Mary. Episode 7. The CIA forbids Thomas and Lucius to alert the League about Stormcloud. As long as the U.S. government doesn't know about a chemical weapon, they won't intervene, and they want the conflict to be resolved quickly. Against their orders, they go to Martha and give the footage to Aziz, both of them deciding to stay in England. Thomas decides to go to medical school, because he has to, because Batman. Meanwhile, Alfred is approached by...
I feel this compelling reason to do so. I don't know what it is.
Why do I taste lead from a pencil? Oh, that's a writer writing me to go to medical school. Alfred is approached by Gully with a job offer, but declines. Gully, suspicious of him, attacks Melanie and tries to kill her, but she wounds him and escapes to Alfred. He buys her a ticket as well, but in the end decides to stay in England and fight. His mother and Dave Boy staying with him. Melanie boards the plane to America with Patricia Wayne. In Hardwood Manor, Bette and Peg Sykes overpower the guards and try to rescue Lord Hardwood, but get surrounded by the army. Realizing that with him dead, Salt will not have the legitimacy to lead the Raven Union, Lord Hardwood pretends he wants to surrender to Salt directly, but then draws his weapon on him, calling him a traitor, and gets shot dead, distracting the army for Sykes' sisters to escape. All right, so episode 6 and 7, we talked a lot about already about Martha and Thomas. you know, in the whole pregnancy thing.
She's pregnant. Yep. She's pregnant. I mean, my goodness. There's a baby Batman just a brewing.
Sure.
I will not swerve you at the end, I swear. Well, I mean, let's see what else happens throughout this. I'm going through my notes here. So we got Patricia. Oh, by the way, you know, Patricia says she knows it's going to be a boy, Mark. So even more fuel for the fire that is a baby Batman, a brewing.
I was kind of hoping when the baby was born it would have a cowl and cape.
It was, yeah. Okay.
It just drives out of her womb in the
with
Batmobile.
Oh, wow. Mae Young ain't got nothing on her, I tell you.
Dr. Spanks on the ass and says, Biff.
That's some onomatopoeia right there. So, what do you think? I guess, really, we have the resolution of Salt taking power from Harwood, who goes out to surrender. He gets killed, and he now is in control of the Raven Union.
I find Salt to be a much more interesting character than Lord Harwood. I was kind of bored with the Lord Harwood character, but I like Salt for the reasons I mentioned earlier. But also, there comes a point where he's like, I want to be Thanos. I just want to kill people.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, Aziz is trying to reason with him. You know, like, they end up having, like, a peace talk. But he's like, you don't understand. This isn't a negotiation. This is an unconditional surrender. And then it's like, okay, then we surrender. And he's like, oh, I'm going to kill you anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So, again, not a well-written character here. Not a very drawn character. Not a well-drawn character. But he plays him really well, you know, for what it's worth.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And this, of course, provides the impetus for Bat to get very upset at Salt and may possibly want revenge. I mean, she watches her friend get killed under the command of Salt. So that's definitely something that we're going to be talking about as we close out the season. And nothing really happened with Aleister Crowley. He pretty much gets away, right? And the Rippers just institutionalized. We're done with that, I assume. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't think Crowley shows back up for the rest of the season. It's just that we get that little bit of tension where I think that they want to turn, I think, Crowley and the Ripper against each other because somebody warns Crowley that the Ripper's coming after you. I think it's Aziz, maybe, or maybe it was Wayne. I can't remember. But anyway, either way, Crowley's ready for him when the Ripper comes after him because he's going to try and kill him for some reason, which I don't even know why. Why was he upset with Crowley? Just because he killed the Archbishop? I don't know. Didn't kill the Archbishop. He just took a picture. I'm throwing stuff out there. Either way, that seems like a really throwaway kind of like, hey, let's just have these two guys try to go at each other. One of them gets institutionalized. The other one's never seen again, at least for the rest of the season. No idea. That's it. I mean, we have the we have the interaction with Sandra and Alfred and Sandra's dad, who shows up after finding out that Alfred's dumped her and punches Alfred right square in the face. And he's not happy with Alfred for the rest of the season, that's for sure. Anytime Alfred shows back up, Sadra's dad is a little upset, tells him to fuck off. That's it, man. I mean, that's all we have really for episode 7. We're plodding along to the resolution of season 2. So anything else off the top of your head?
No.
Okay.
All right. So here we go, the joyous conclusion. The Hangman's Noose, Episode 8. After Lord Harwood's funeral in London, Salt demands the unconditional surrender of the Queen, threatening to unleash Stormcloud. Martha tells Thomas she is pregnant, but refuses when he wishes to marry her. Bet and Peg kidnap Vicky, Salt's mistress, but Katie talks about how to parting her. Yeah, that's a really funny scene, actually. He's just like, I'm here to get revenge. I'm going to hurt her. And she's like, you promised me you wouldn't. Like, this is such a dysfunctional relationship.
It is, absolutely. No more violence. No more violence, please.
Oh, how about
Ben,
a little,
no
little violence? Just a little. How about a little tweak of the nipple? Just, no.
Don't do it.
Alfred goes to visit Gully and resolve things, but his gang ambushes him. Gully leads Alfred to the woods, stabs him, and then hunts him. While wounded, Alfred gets the upper hand after creating a trap from branches. However, he refuses to kill Gully. Delirious from his wound, he swears to an apparition of Baza that he wants to make a difference and serve a higher purpose. Dave Boy and Mrs. Pennyworth arrive and save Alfred. Meanwhile, the Raven Union High Council elects Salt as chancellor, and it's revealed that Alfred's father is alive, bound to a life support wheelchair.
Holy crap!
He somehow managed to avoid a grenade explosion.
Unbelievable. I couldn't... Well, okay. As far as stingers go, when it comes to this season, that one got me. I was sitting there yesterday watching that episode, and, you know, the pounding of the table happens. Everybody's saying they're voting Salt into power or whatever, and this guy rolls up. And I'm like, what? Who is? I've seen that guy before. Couldn't tell with all the apparatus. And here it was Pennyworth's dad. And I was like, holy crap. So I was hooked, man. I was glad. And this whole episode, episode 8, was really just focused on Gully and Pennyworth trying to kill each other. Which, hey, I love the ingenious way that he was able to, I guess, trick him into getting hit by that trap, that he tricked Gully into getting hit by that trap. So good stuff there with episode 8.
Episode 9, Paradise Lost. Thomas, Martha, and Lucius approach Alfred for assistance in breaking into the Raven Union to steal Stormcloud, much to Mrs. Pennyworth's disapproval. Alfred finds Sandra and makes love with her before embarking on the mission.
Do you have a vagina? I have a penis.
Hello, care for a shag?
Meanwhile, the dad's up the stairs yelling, fuck off!
Martha seemingly agrees to Thomas's proposal of marriage. Bette and Peg force Vicky to arrange a meeting with Salt. Alfred manages to secure Stormcloud and escape, but not before Salt captures them. Salt sends Mrs. Pennyworth to talk with Alfred to his disbelief. Alfred refuses to his offer to join the Raven Union. Meanwhile, Bette and Peg locate and free Mrs. Gaunt. While escaping, Bette runs into Alfred and releases them before parting ways. Alfred and the team fail to escape and get trapped again. Salt grants Pennyworth another chance to persuade Alfred to join the Union. Mr. Pennyworth betrays the Union, and Alfred kills the guards, and they steal Stormcloud before leaving the Raven Union compound. On the way out, Alfred calls Aziz to inform him about their success. But Salt is like the Emperor from Return of the Jedi.
Oh, yes.
He let them escape.
That's right.
Out. He wanted them to escape, because that's not the real Stormcloud.
No, it is not.
Mrs. Pennyworth learns her husband is still alive while everyone celebrates at the League HQ. Gully storms in looking for Alfred and accidentally breaks the capsule, revealing it to be inactive.
Now, we just need to... folks, get ready, because we're into the final episode. I can't wait to hear how they wrote this out.
Salt reveals Stormcloud is already in London and arrests General Thursday, intending to detonate it despite the League surrender. Martha says yes to Thomas, and Aziz marries them on the spot. Aww.
Yeah.
Having second thoughts about letting his family die for his cause, Mr. Pennyworth tells Alfred Stormcloud was smuggled into London inside Lord Hardwood's coffin. Alfred and Dave Boy locate the bomb. Lucius tries to deactivate it. Should be how that's written. This person should use Grammarly. Meanwhile, Salt is attacked by the Sykes sisters in his penthouse and beaten up, but manages to get the detonator and trigger it. Alfred offers to swallow the capsule, but Gully volunteers. The detonation is averted, but he turns blue and dies.
Okay, stop. Okay, do you remember how big that fucking thing was?
Yeah, and he got it down with a swig of whiskey.
It's like, that thing is encased in metal. And it certainly isn't a gel capsule, as far as I know. I mean, I would assume it's not. I was like, how are you? Okay, all right. So he just, grabs a flask, washes it right down. Continue, please.
Pennyworth says goodbye to his wife and then unplugs his life support to pass away.
Did he unplug it?
That's what it says here.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, neither do I, but that's what it says, and who cares?
Well, I just remember him sitting there talking to her, and he's like, "I, you know, I love you," and she's like, "Oh, you're," I can't remember. She's like, "You're so special," and then he's dead.
Yep.
I'm like, "Oh, well, okay." I missed it. I must have missed it too.
6 months later, the Raven Union, now led by Francis Gaunt, assaults London while Martha gives birth to a baby girl.
Six months later, Flashpoint fucking happens. All right, get ready for this shit because I have no idea what's going on.
Alfred leads the counterattack with Dave Boy, Bette, and Kathy, and are joined by a revived Gully who now has life draining powers because that's how stupid this show got.
What the hell's going on?
So yeah, they somehow managed to bring this fucker back to life, and then he shoot. Now this poison gas that was supposed to kill everybody can now be focused and centered on one person, and it doesn't, because that's not how gas works, doesn't enter the atmosphere killing everybody else around it. It's just a focused laser.
I fucking understand what happened. All I know is I'm sitting there, I've got to talk about this sequence, okay? So Gully swallows it because, you know, he's the commanding officer. He was going to die a hero. So he swallows it. Everybody's having a good old time because Gully lives for like 3 seconds later. And then all of a sudden he starts falling down and he's in pain. And there is, as he dies, he glows blue. And he apparently dies in front of them. And I think either Dave Boy or Alfred looks over at Lucius and says, "What happened?" And Lucius is like, "I don't know." And that is exactly what anybody who watched that happen thought. That went through their head. Like, I have no idea what just happened. So, okay, he swallowed the gaseous pill. I remember him asking before he swallows, he's like, "What's going to happen to me?" So, "I imagine you'll burst." That doesn't happen. So he swallows the pill, and then he kind of like starts to glow blue. They think he's dead. They put him in the morgue vehicle, and all of a sudden he starts glowing blue again. Alfred opens up the back, and we kind of, I think that's where we fade to black, and it's 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, what's going on? Because he's yelling and screaming again. He's obviously not dead. And then they open up the bread truck. Okay, now that we take a few to get there, but the 6 months later, there's the war is going on still, and the bread truck pulls up and out with just not even fazed by gunfire, strolls Alfred, and he's talking with Bette. And he's like, "All right, secret weapon or what? I don't know what he's planning on doing." He opens up the bread truck, and out comes Gully, who's still alive. He's got all these fucking tubes out of him. He looks like, so people were comparing him to Mr. Freeze. That's what
I thought it was.
I see. The thing is that the gas that the storm cloud was using killed people by their fears. So if anything, I'm pulling references to Scarecrow.
Mm-hmm.
He don't look like no fucking Scarecrow.
No.
He looks like fucking RoboCop or Terminator. And he's still like this pale shade of blue, but he's still alive, and he is life draining powers. Is that what they said in the wiki or what you're reading there?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. What the fuck ever. And they just charge towards the screen. Oh man, I mean, and what's funny is I sent you a message when she was having the baby. I was like, they're going to throw a swerve, it's going to be a girl, because Batman, as far as I knew, wasn't born in London, so, or Britain or the UK. So I was like, I wonder if they're going to try and do something crazy here and make it like his sister or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, sure enough, she has a girl, and I wish I could say I was vindicated, actually. I wasn't surprised I was vindicated, because I knew that's probably what was going to happen. But, man, this with those last, like, I don't know, 20 minutes of this show, I don't know what season 3 is going to be like. I mean, it seems like we're just going into science fiction now compared to all this melodrama that we've been used to. I mean, I cannot see a melodramatic episode having Gully Bork in it. You know, I just can't. I can't see it.
Yeah, I hate to keep repeating myself and kind of belaboring the same point, but it's like they look at who's watching, they look at the amount of people watching, they look at the online chatter, and they see that it's not generating a ton of buzz, they're not maintaining an audience, and they're like, okay, and then they go into panic mode.
You know, that's scary. And, well, again, you said this was... this guy that's doing the show worked on Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's just the way he's built.
It's like, here's a very simple premise. Okay, but what about dinosaurs?
It would be pretty freaking scary if, like, this was the plan all along, you know, the whole time.
Yeah, we're going to build to a cyborg fucking scarecrow.
Well, here's the thing. You know, if he was known for that on Gotham, they're like, okay, well, we've got this great property, Pennyworth, that we've got kind of going. Who should we bring in that would really fuck things up? They're like, well, this guy does a fine job fucking things up. He's done it before. Bring him over and turn him loose. Let him have full reign. So what his superpower is he'll lull you into thinking that the show is one type of show. By the end of the second season, all no, sir. We are going somewhere else. This is based off of a comic, so I guess that's what he feels needs to be done. And I don't know.
Well, you know, in defense of that, I mean, don't comics sometimes delve into the stupid? You know, like all kinds of weird shit happens that makes no sense, and then they have to, you know, then they have to turn one pizza on top of another pizza and start the whole thing over again.
Happened, yes. That is an actual thing that has been described by comic book executives.
All right.
What do you think?
Here's what I think. I think season one had a 70% critical tomato meter and a 94% audience score, compared with season two, which had a 60% tomato meter and an 81% audience score. People didn't love it.
Okay. Yeah.
And definitely the critics are like rolling their eyes at this now.
Yeah, they've got to be. I mean, if you were used to what was coming in the first, I mean, it felt very James Bond. I remember that thought going through my head for season one.
Mm-hmm.
And most of season two, I think I remember the start of the episode with the wrestler coming at Alfred. And of course, this was like a premonition of, or not a premonition, this, it was kind of foreshadowing or showing you what was happening at that moment. But then they're like, well, 3 weeks earlier, they kind of show you what built up to that. When I saw that, the wrestler in the mask with coming at Alfred with the axe, and she's all decked in red, and I'm like, oh crap, we're getting some superheroes here. And what I was thinking was, these were, what it ends up being is they're just wrestlers in costume, which you can draw plenty of parallels to comic books and wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was thinking was, it's like, oh, we might start to actually kind of branch out and maybe start touching on some of, like, maybe the Justice Society of America. Because in the 60s, that's, you know, if you look at some of the Silver Age superhero groups that were around in DC, there's a legitimate way you could bring them into a show that is set up like this. It would be more along the lines of some comic book superheroes that are like Daredevil or so, you know, something like that. That's kind of grounded.
I want to pitch you on an idea then.
Okay.
What if they don't bring in the DC superheroes? What if they bring in the Watchmen?
Well, okay. So you're talking about like you guys can't say pre Dr. Manhattan, but pre obviously the cataclysm that happens, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Watchmen that would have existed in that time period.
Well, I mean, those feel like they would probably fit in that show because there wasn't anything over dramatic that happened in the prior to Dr. Manhattan showing up. I mean, the whole point of that story is Dr. Manhattan and how powerful he is compared to these other vigilantes who are pretty much run-of-the-mill, me and you, or Alfred. They, I think it could work. I mean, it's definitely going to work better than freaking, you know, Gully being this fear spawning robot thing. It just didn't feel right to me. It is a weird ending. You could do so much more. Did they say, or have you seen anything that says that, you know, okay, hey, this is Gully, this is the precursor to Doomsday, or was there anything that tied him to some type of an actual superhero that's happening, or supervillain or whatever in the DC universe?
I have not seen anything.
Me either. It's not like we went and researched a lot of this, though, but regardless, if you're going to try and get that across, you want to try and make it obvious. Don't try and hide it or make it your own thing, your own spin on it. You want to try and be like, that's what gets me excited about watching WandaVision. Oh, look at that. Oh, look at that costume. I know that, you know. You see that meme all over Facebook where it's Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the TV screen. That's what makes shows like that fun. Gully going through the transformation he did, I was just confused. I didn't know what was going on.
So I'm looking at, like, a fandom wiki page for Gulliver Troy, and it just says he's a super soldier.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
To say anything about that, you know, he could spit blue beams at people or anything like that.
His body was transformed, and now he has special abilities that have turned into a one-man army. Troy now has special armor that allows him to channel his storm cloud abilities, and he unleashes them on the Raven soldiers.
Oh, okay, hold on. So is that an actual bio for the guy in the show, or a bio for the
character? Hang on, I got something. The superhuman abilities Gulliver gained from swallowing Stormcloud's canister has similarities to the origin of Freedom Fighter member Human Bomb in the comics.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't know how many reviews...
So the Freedom Fighters.
Okay.
Maybe that's where we're going next. The Freedom Fighters are a team of American superheroes led by Uncle Sam. Originally, they were the last heroes of Earth-X, where the Nazis had won World War II. And taken over, they fought against tyranny and oppression in a completely authoritarian world. Founding members included Black Condor, Dollman, Human Bomb, Phantom Lady, and the Ray, later joined by Firebrand.
Those... Okay, you could probably make an argument for those characters.
Yeah.
Because the fascism / Nazis, pretty easy to draw parallels there. I guess. So maybe
we're just gonna give up. We're gonna give up this fucking. Once again, we're giving up entirely on what the premise of this show is, and we're going straight into superheroes. Good.
Well, and with Pennyworth, I've read some Batman. I know Alfred's got a history, but you know, you certainly weren't reading Batman to learn about Alfred being connected to all these previous superheroes. At least I wasn't. Maybe it's one of those things where I'm just a Marvel zombie and I'm not that well versed with DC, and I should be yelling and screaming and jumping up, hitting the ceiling that we got this. But I from what I'm seeing, I don't hear a lot of people going, have you watched the last episode of Pennyworth? Nobody's come up to me. Nobody. Who has watched this, Mark, other than me and you, that you know of?
Nobody. I have an article here from Bustle.com. They did an interview with Bruno Heller, and he says, I'm really excited for season 3 now because we've got all these pillars in place, Heller explained. As you can see this season, the world is changing very rapidly, and it's sort of an acceleration of what all of us have been seeing over the last 50 years, which is this race towards a strange new world that no one is really going to be familiar with or comfortable in. Batman is the modern mythical character that struggles with all of those contradictions. He added that he and his team are very aware that their show could be setting up for a future Batman story. It's brilliant because we're working in a pre-comics world. It's a fantastic alternative DC London, so we can almost do what we like. But we're conscious that all of our choices as the characters we're creating will feed into the Batman thing. He said, he added that Batman will come much later, but the choices we make and the people we become will inform who he is, and I do feel conscious of that. Okay.
I mean, if you want to make... The problem is we're in season two right now. Season one set itself so apart from superheroes that leaning into it now is not going to go well. If you want to set things up in season one that, okay, these are things that would affect the future of the DC universe somehow, great, start that. But we're small scale, street level London, and it doesn't feel like that. I mean, I respect them for trying to, if that's what their vision is to try and actually set up a alternate universe for DC, great, but it's not going to go over well, not with the audience that you built. Mm-hmm. I say that there's an audience that's built, but the people who are watching season one and enjoying it are going to watch season two, and at the end of that, you're going to lose some. That's just the way it is. I don't think you're going to gain any either, because, like I said, nobody's coming to us and saying, holy crap, the end of season two, Pennyworth, has such repercussions on what's... I can't wait to see what's going to happen next, because yada, yada, yada. It just doesn't tie enough in to what we are familiar with the DC universe. DC's Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, you know, somehow get that in there if you're going to do this, because season three is probably going to be it if there is one.
It has no Metacritic score.
Yay.
Dude, I don't think anyone's watching this.
I honestly don't foresee it being renewed. I just can't.
I don't know. I mean, HBO Max is like really committed to, you know, an expansive DC TV universe, and so if the show is cheap enough to make, they need content for their streaming service. And that's the thing, you know, like how many people have Epix? Like, I know you found some high seas way to watch this.
Yar.
But most people don't have Epix. I mean, we have it as like an add-on, but I pay extra for it. But like, yep. But most people don't pay extra for Epix. And so I don't think it's a very easy show for people to find. So even if it were a better show, I'm not entirely certain. I mean, it might do well for the audience Epix has. Like, if they took that... Because another show that just started its second season, that's Godfather of Harlem, which is another show I watch on Epix that has Forest Whitaker in it. Godfather of Harlem's really good. I don't know how many people are watching it. Not people I talk to don't talk about it. But it also, you know, a show about, like, you know, a Harlem crime lord and Malcolm X might not be their bag. So, but I mean, that, you know, that second season starting now. So, I mean, like I said, you know, the people running Epix might be looking at their total number of users and how many of those users are watching those shows. And if it's more than half, if it's, you know, mostly anyone who has Epix watches these things, it's just not a lot of people who have Epix, then, you know, they might say, like, this is worth continuing to do. You know, people are watching the show who have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I mean, if season three comes out, we'll continue to stay with the stupid thing.
I mean, if we're jumping off a cliff right now, you know, I want to see how far we're going to fall.
And yeah.
We've got to, because, yeah, like I said, I'm curious as to what it's going to be. Pennyworth is going to be invited to pre-Justice League or all the Freedom Fighters you were talking about. Yeah, I mean, my goodness, I'm looking at CBR.com. Pennyworth season 2 still struggles to find its focus. Agreed.
All right. What do you listen to these days? What do you got on the old AmazonMusic.com?
Oh, well, I have been checking out some fantastic chiptune. Recently, we talked about Anna Monoguchi, and I've been listening to that left and right.
Okay. Yeah, as I predicted, my son, that's like his new favorite thing.
Yes, nice.
He likes to call it 8-bit music. That's what he calls it.
That's good. That's good.
So if you want to check out all the stuff that we've been reviewing on the Metal Hammer of Doom, whether it's Anna Monoguchi or the Mortal Kombat soundtracks or Brujeria or Deathclock or Tomahawk, you can click our link at getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network. That's getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network to get a free 30 days of amazonmusic.com.
Very nice.
All right. Tomorrow, well, let me, before I say it, this was a very busy day here on the network. Jesse dropped an undisputed attitude. He dropped an Unspoken Issues podcast. We dropped a re-airing of our Brujeria review for Viva Presidente Trump. Alexis and I did a review of Looney Tunes Season 1D, and then we just wrapped up our Pennywise review yesterday.
Pennyworth.
Yeah, Pennyworth. I knew I was going to do that at least once. Yesterday, Sean, Jesse, and I reviewed Anna Meneguchi, Scott Pilgrim versus the World of Video Game Soundtrack, speaking of chiptune. We also re-aired our Rogue One, because yesterday was the release of the Star Wars The Bad Batch, and it was May the 4th. So we released our review of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, on Monday on Jesse's show, that he doesn't do anymore. Myself and Sean Comer reviewed Scott Pilgrim, The Color Collection Volume 1, which is Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life and Scott Pilgrim versus the World. On Sunday, myself, Robert Winfrey, and my daughter reviewed Demon Slayer, the movie Mugen Train. Tomorrow, we've got three recordings for you. We've got AEW Blood and Guts, The Mitchells versus the Machines, and Scott Pilgrim versus the World. We were going to do that as an on-try. We're actually going to do it now as a Damn You Hollywood, since there's money to talk about, and I kind of just want to talk about the movie and not have to do like a hard line negative criticism of it. So I don't want to get beat up by Sean either. On Friday the 7th, we'll be re-airing our Days of Future Past review. On Saturday, the Twilight Saga with my wife on it. And then on Sunday, we've got Jessica Jones. First season of that is going to re-air on the W2M network. So get ready for all of that. Last week, we did a whole bunch of Mortal Kombat stuff. And then next week, we've got some Falcon and the Winter Soldier coming up, some Weezer, some Wrath of Man, and the Superblog team-up. We've got two entries into the Superblog team-up this year, one for Long Road to Ruin, Dr. Doolittle, the two Eddie Murphy movies, and then one for the Metal Hammer of Doom, Dr. Feelgood by Motley Crue. So that's what's coming up. That's what's been. That's what's happening. That's what's hip. Jesse, besides the unspoken issues I already talked about, what else you got going on?
Yeah. So make sure if you like What Ifs, which if you've watched this show, you're probably thinking to yourself, well, what if? What If Volume 1, Number 1, dropped on the syndicated Source Material show. That was back on May 1st, so if you want to check that out, you're more than welcome to. And just be prepared, because May 15th, 2 weeks later, What If Volume 2, Number 4, What If the Alien Costume Had Possessed Spider-Man? One of Evan Bevan's favorite What If series. Check that out. That's a good one. I'll tell you. Me and Ronnie had a good time talking about that. Some crazy stuff happened. So other than that, you know, keep an eye out for future unspoken issues where Dean and I are supposed to record a couple episodes back to back. That's supposed to happen tomorrow. And of course, we have the upcoming Tripped Up Trivia debut episode. We're recording that this coming Saturday night, and I believe that should be airing probably the week later. So big fun time. It'll be talking about the general trivia questions on science fiction. So keep an eye out, because I think Alexis is going to host this one. We've already got a panel of four people, so this is going to be a good time. You know, I love to play the games. Mark Radulich loves to play games with me. We've done that before. He always loses. That's just the way it is when he plays with me, because I make sure that it happens. take you back to covers week there on Metal Hammer of Doom a couple of times.
I really got to re-air those just so you can hear me freak out when Jesse is like when Jesse cheats to win.
Robert Cooper undefeated. Anyway, that's good stuff. But that's all I have.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us. For those of you that did listen, thanks for joining us here on our TV Party Tonight review of Pennyworth Season 2. For Jesse Starcher, I'm Mark Radulich. Be well, be safe, and behave.